Oh my god, guys. Episode 99 of Declarations of War. We are almost to episode 100. This is amazing. Your host for this evening, myself, Alexei Avkard. My faithful co-host, Ninja Turtle.
Hey, guys.
The returning CSM representative, Mike Azariah.
How are you doing?
And Noir Director of Recruitment, Feral.
Hey, hey.
Now, as I mentioned, guys, we are one episode away from episode 100. Oh my god! We want to do something special for this. We have not really decided what that thing is going to be. If you have ideas, send it in to the show. You can contact me and Turtle in-game, or on Twitter. But we could do... We already did lots of guests from the past with the 50th anniversary, so I want to do something a little different. We need to figure out what that is. But guaranteed, it's going to be awesome. You're going to want to listen to that for sure. First off, some shout-outs. I want to give a shout-out to Pre-Star, who is in the channel right now. He just came back to EVE. Hey, Pre-Star. He's listening to us live. I also want to give a shout-out to Aikio, so a former Noir director who took some time away from the game. He is now back in FC. And finally, I want to give a shout-out to Elise Randolph and Muck Bravian from Pandemic Legion, PL. Generally cool guys. Did not smite us in the soft competition, so always nice of... Always thankful for that. It's always a nice thing to do. You know, not ruthlessly crush us with, like, 100 super capitals. Turtle, take it away.
I want to give a shout-out to World of Warships. It's an open beta now, and it's a lot of fun if you like shooting at boats with other boats.
Are submarines live?
I don't know. Just, aircraft carriers, battleships, cruisers, and destroyers. But it's got a lot of the, basically the same layout in terms of tech tree and, like, module upgrades that World of Tanks has, but it's a good game.
Awesome. Feral?
I'm going to double up shout-outs with you, Alec, and give a shout-out to Pre-Star. It's always good seeing close bros return to game, especially fellow Canadians. And also shout-out to the Path of Exile devs. Another great game if you guys haven't played it. Big, big update coming out shortly. Going to improve the game a lot.
Mike?
Well, I got 2.5. Shout-out to the Rookie Help channel, who probably none of them listen to podcasts because they don't know podcasts exist, but it is the second fastest scrolling channel in EVE, first being Jita. And to the two countries of North America, who both are celebrating birthdays in the past, well, today and 3 days ago. So happy Canada Day and happy Independence Day to the U.S. in that order, seeing as there are 3 Canadians on this recording and only 2 Americans.
Yep, but we are recording this on the 4th of July, so today is our day.
If you say
so. You don't get to have
this
day.
And you have
our day.
Admin rights, so you can mute me if I say otherwise.
Oh, man, it is so awesome. 4th of July, it's going to be a great 4th. We're recording the podcast. There's going to be a barbecue. Friends from my new city of San Francisco all going to be there. There's going to be shrimps. There's going to be cheeseburgers. There's going to be hot dogs. There's going to be fireworks. It's going to be fantastic. Canada Day? Yeah, we celebrated it, sort of. But there's just nothing like the original Independence Day. All right, our sponsor, EVEBET. www.eve-bet.com, New Eden's premier betting service. You can bet on EVE stuff, like the Alliance tournament coming up. You can bet on real-life sports, including UFC fights, NFL, NHL, soccer, you name it. They've handled hundreds of trillions in bets since opening, so they're a service you can trust. And they have more casual games, too, like blackjack and stuff, if that's your bag. So go check them out, eve-bet.com. Some poll results. We asked you, the Fountain War, who's your money on? Is it going to be Black Legion? Is it going to be Brave? Or is it going to be some combination of the Fountain Core alliances that live out of the NPC stations? Brave, 0 votes. Black Legion at 62%, and 38% say Fountain Core is going to take over and win the war. No one has faith in Brave.
Well, they're doing a tiny bit of an implosion right now.
Yeah, a little bit. For those of you who haven't been following the Brave situation, they participated in the Sovereignty beta thing. And apparently, like, having to split focus between Duality and Tranquility, where they were getting invaded by Black Legion, like, really exposed a lot of the divisions and problems and just inefficiencies in the Alliance, and there's lots of people upset, there's lots of rage posts on Reddit, people are not turning up for either fleets. Sometimes people are asking for fleets to be formed while they have R6-4s coming out in TQ, they're asking for fleets on Duality. Hasn't been a really nice time for them.
At least since then, you've seen some changes. At least I've seen them on Reddit with the CNM being dissolved and things like that. Kind of looking up, you'd hope, but...
They just restructured their FC system, too.
Yep, and to their credit, they haven't lost too many people. So if you look on .lan, you know, that doesn't look too bad. Membership hasn't really dropped that much. Sovereignty, they've actually gained a few systems back. They haven't lost any station systems. They're down some 6-4s, which is going to really hurt them in the long run. But, you know, for as big and painful and scary as it looked like with their TeamSpeak being dropped because some dude decided not to support their TeamSpeak anymore, and with all the problems and hurt feelings and resentment among leadership, resentment between members, I feel like they're coming out of this okay.
Surviving is tough when you're being kicked from the outside on a regular basis, though. Personally, I think they need to kind of draw in and refocus. Right now, they're too spread out, and losing or even getting beat on a regular basis by Black Legion, A, isn't a surprise, but B, isn't good for company morale.
Yeah, certainly not, but they've already moved from Catch to Fountain for this very reason, like an elite PvP organization kicking their face in every day. So it's like, I'm sure it's they have a feeling of like, well, where can I go where this isn't going to happen? There's not really an easy answer for that.
I wonder if they can just hold out till Fozzysov, whether that's going to make a difference.
I don't really think it will, to be honest.
You don't anything, or do, I didn't catch that.
I was just saying, I don't really think it will make much of a difference, to be quite honest. I mean...
Yeah, but once you have Entosis, it's not can you bring big ships to pop somebody, it's can you bring bodies.
No, there's diminishing returns on that. And, you know, member for member, Black Legion has more skill points, more money, more combat experience. I feel like it would actually, in some ways, make it easier for Black Legion to leverage their smaller numbers of higher skill pilots against Brave and make more serious pushes against their sovereignty structures.
And if they can't hold their space, that's kind of what the Entosis is about. Either you hold your space and live in it, or you don't. And yep. I think we are going to see the rise of the Reavers. This is going to be a very violent time. A lot of people are saying it's going to be boring, but I think initially there may be that kind of Mexican standoff pause where you have wah, 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 da, da, da. But after that, once it starts going Reaver, it is going to go violent fast.
Wait, go back to that? What is the Mexican standoff theme song?
From The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Na 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 na! Wah wah wah! I see what you're going for. Just call me off guard.
Sorry, you know I think in analogies. I can't think straight, so I think sideways.
Oh, Lord. So, there's a couple aspects to this. On the one side, I think it's going to be easier for Black Legion to take systems off Brave with the new system. The other is, it's probably going to be easier for Brave to counterattack them and put Black Legion on the defensive more. And then, you know, whoever wins is going to be some combination of whoever can do offense and defense well at the same time.
See, that's where I'm saying numbers makes a difference. Skill points are good if you can take it. But say your footprint, Black Legion can take 10 systems, but Brave has enough people to take 20 in the same time zone. You understand what I mean?
In the end, Black loses
10 systems just because they can't get everybody to every system at the same time. Quantity will be a quality. Just way back to Goons discovering that when they went after Bob.
I mean, quantity is always going to be a thing. Just my learning experience from having done the soft beta is that, like, it's a lot easier for a small number of highly coordinated pilots to make a larger impact.
Oh, I believe it. A larger
and Brave
impact.
Got their asses beat, like hard.
Yeah, they didn't play well on that. But then, they, like you said, they were undergoing calls with 64s coming under attack at the same time. So they had a lot of cross issues. No, like I said, I'm looking forward to seeing what's going to happen. I don't think anybody knows for sure. There's lots of geniuses who are out there saying they know exactly what's going to happen. One of them might be right because I've heard so many different opinions. Somebody has to be right, but I don't know which one of them it's going to be.
Oh, it's going to be a bloodbath. I'm fairly confident in that.
Do you think the music will happen? Do you think?
Yeah, there's going to be definite wah, wah, wah. Definite wah, wah, wah. The new system is, it's fun-ish. I mean, it's still a grind, but it's a shorter grind in terms of, like, actual on-field work for smaller groups. Larger groups, like the Pandemic Legions, the Goon Swarms, they're going to experience a longer time taking systems. Like, they won't be able to just reinforce a station in 10 minutes with a billion super capitals. That's not going to be a thing anymore. But for everyone else, it's going to seem much faster. And in terms of the actual on-field dynamics, it's a lot more fluid and engaging. The pacing feels faster if there's a defender versus an attacker. Like, there's a lot going on. It's a lot more complicated, but it's also a lot more fun and a lot more accessible in terms of size. So I think once people start to realize that, you're going to have, like, Goonswarm types probably, like you said, send out Reaver teams and just cause problems for everybody. And then on the other end of it, I think you're going to see a lot more groups that start to think, well, hey, yeah, I could actually go out there and do this. Now, it still has to be on the financial side. I'm not sure. I know that there's a lot of money to be made in 00. I've seen the graphs, just like I'm sure Mike has seen the graphs. But a lot of the people that are making that that money are, like, botting carriers and stuff. They're not actually, like, the average 00 player.
Yeah, but that's the thing. That's the 1%, you know, and you always have that somebody is making a ton of cash. It's whether they're sharing or whether it's going into SRPs or whether just one person is becoming a trillionaire.
Or RMTing it, which is more often the case.
I've heard a lot of rumors, but I ain't seen no... Well, if I saw proof, then it'd be handed over to security and exit one player or one set of players, if you know what I mean. So I don't see proof that doesn't happen.
I think there have been enough bannings to show that it is happening. Obviously, they haven't banned everyone. And I don't think every person who's carrier ratting in 00 is doing that, but certainly there are people using programs to do it a lot faster. And generally, those people are using their ISK for unscrupulous ends, I would say. It may be the half of 1%, but it's still a significant chunk. And I feel like CCP looks at that 1%, sees the income they're making, and is like, oh, well, we can't possibly buff things because look how insane it would be. But they're not looking at that very, very long, long tail of just like, It's
poor
average
people.
Income still compared to HiSec.
Yeah, the 90% or 99%. And that's the thing. But that happens in a lot of different situations. There are people who, every time I see numbers quoted on, they're making too much ISK. They always base the other guy on optimized, you know, min-max to the extreme. So when they quote, I'll use the one I know the best, incursions. The numbers I see quoted for how much incursioneers are making is nowhere near what I make when I'm in an incursion. You know, it's like three times what I make. And I run in decent fleets. I just don't run in the super fleets where everyone's flying blinged out Max and Vindys. So it's the same thing. I've seen numbers for wormholes where they say wormhole guys should be nerfed. We should have ways to open up the holes and keep them open so we can go in and rob those rich bastards. And usually the guys in the wormholes are going, not us. No, we're just making average, you know, enough to pay the bills.
So I guess this is a sort of a CSM issue. Like, how do you approach that question. Do you balance on the 1% or do you try to make changes to limit them and meanwhile look to ways to buff the 99%?
It's also who do you believe.
In those areas of space that need the buffing.
Yeah, and it's who do you believe? Like, who do you listen to? Because everybody wants to point the finger at some other playstyle and say they're doing it. It's not fair that they're making any ISK at all. They should come and be targets for us. So HiSec gets it all the time. You know, it's about once every 2-3 months I see a remove level 4 missions from HiSec because they're making too much ISK. So where should I take my numbers from? And I've even heard people not trusting CCP to give straight numbers. But my answer to that is if they give me bogus numbers to work with, even if I can't report them to you, then why do they have me as a CSM? Because if I make all my suggestions and discussions based on bad information, then everything I say becomes bad by contamination. Either they give me the right numbers and I can answer their questions, or they give me bad numbers and then they should ignore me.
And then you also have to remember that it's not a sizable portion, but a significant amount of our player base are tinfoil hatted morons.
Hey, I happen to make a really good tinfoil hat, I will have you know. They made the rounds during FanFest 2013, 2014. They kept getting stolen, so I'd always see the same hat on different heads for the hour after I handed them out.
I mean, I'm 100% positive CCP is giving people real numbers. To me, the question is not whether the numbers are real, it's what CCP sees when they're looking at them.
And it's also how they measure their metrics. The hardest thing in the world to define, and I'd love any listener to tell me how they would do it, is who is a HiSec player and who is a LowSec player? Like, how do you define where you live?
Well, I'm not even worried about that so much as, you know, where you make the money. Like, if someone per gameplay session is being able to pull in more money in HiSec than in, say, 0-0, where, you know, especially now with the new sob system, like, you're really going to have to work hard to hold your space. You know, that seems incorrect to me.
Yeah.
Especially
it's
with the cost of living still pretty low in HiSec.
It's going to be worse come, you know, the Reavers and that sort of thing. It's going to be a lot. I wonder if it's going to cause more roaming fleets just looking for something to end toast or people to kill.
I'd say it's probably a fair bet. I don't know about looking to entose. I think you can still go around and entose to harass people, but if you're like a fleet and not a lone person, it's not super worth your time to do that. But it might be lots of roaming fleets looking for people that are out entosing things and try to get fights off them that way. Or just because what I expect to happen is a lot more, you know, alliances living in and around the edges. Where, you know, there's going to be more smaller groups that probably don't get along with each other. They could be roaming each other's space. And
who gets along with who?
And those groups are going to have roaming fleets out, and then people are going to have roaming fleets looking for those roaming fleets. Pre-Star asks, do you think it will be possible for 10 to 50 man corps to take and hold small amounts of lucrative SOV? I am going to put that in our listener questions section, which we are going to get to in a bit, and we're going to move on to the next story, which is we've currently had a blast from the past. The man who, quote, retired from blogging, end quote, Ripard Teg, write an article about how Eve is dying. He threw in lots of numbers and looked at PCU counts and all this stuff. And everyone's like, oh no, he was dying. And then Noisy of Noisy Gamer, who I, full disclosure, consider a much better blogger, put out a Eve is not really dying post, which looked at the same numbers and pretty much explained every drop that you could see to a reasonable amount. So, basically, what is happening is the PCU counts are going down. Average players logged in at any one time is going down.
So I will admit that graph looks scary the way he presented it, but I like a lot of the commenters pointed out the fact that that graph is deceptive in that the y-axis does not start at zero, but starts at something like 9,000.
Just like any graph, you can graph any data to have any, you know, perceived outcome that you like. Really?
Yeah. Are we?
Do you mean
decline?
To tell me,
yes.
Mike, that Ripart Tag is presenting things in a questionable light to gin up fear? I'm shocked.
Shocked, I say. Actually, you know, I get along. I was on CSM8 with Ripard, and I do like him. I get along fine with him. He and I argue occasionally, but we always argued in a good-natured fashion, and he knows I am a graph junkie, so he knows if I would even correct Dr. Ayo if he presented a graph and it was questionable, and I gave him Dr. Ayo marks on every graph he put up. I'd hold up a sheet with a 4 out of 5 or a 3 out of 5 for his graphs. So being a math teacher, hell, I get in on that sort of thing. Rippert has corrected me on math because he and I had a different way of translating what Lilu said once about the election numbers. Is the graph in decline? Yeah. Does Noisy do a decent job of explaining it? I think so, for the most part. Do I think Eve's dying? No. I'd hate to think that I'm the one playing the dance band on the Titanic, and, you know, if this is the last CSM, that would be hilarious that I rode the bloody thing into the ground, but I really, really don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, so I mean, okay, the numbers are going down. The number of users that are still like playing with each other at any one time, going down. Naturally, PvP kills declining somewhat similarly because there are less people around to kill and be killed. However, Noisy points this out. There's more EVE blogs. There's more EVE podcasts. FanFest attendance is essentially as high as it's ever been. I think it was only higher 1 year previous.
Vegas sold out, didn't it?
Yep, Vegas sold out twice in a row. You got players like me who are going to be flying down to EVE Down Under. All this is going on, the CSM elections, you know, not stellar turnout, but still I think we were stronger this year than previous. Mike, is that true?
Yeah, well, that's one of those things where I actually need to sit Lilu down and ask her what she meant by a certain statistic. The way she said it was a 3% increase in turnout. And Rippert immediately did some math and said, that means Eve is dying. And I did some math and said, no, it means Eve is growing. And so, technically, I think Rippert might be right with his numbers, but I still don't see it as a proof Eve is dying. We had better turnout.
I mean,
all right.
Even graphs aside, stats aside, like, the general feel of EVE, in my opinion, is it's an improving game over the last year and a half, 2 years. I've really been happy with where development has gone. So even just throw stats and everything out of the water, it feels like EVE is a better game. And therefore, in my opinion, it's nowhere near dying. I mean, the roadmap looks good. And it has been, they've been delivering, unlike CCP of the previous years. You know what I mean?
Well, Farrah brings up
like
a good point.
Out,
like,
Alec,
development. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Mike.
Sorry. I'd like to point out one thing. Your initial shout-outs made me smile because, what was it, Pre-Star and IKO58 are both, how did you phrase it, old players who are coming back after taking time off.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not something that happens with a dying game, that you get people jumping back on to watch the ship sink.
We've had a lot of people come back. I mean, these are just two of the most recent, but we've had a lot of returning players over the past, I would say, 3 to 4 months. You know, some of them come back and aren't able to play as much as they used to because families or other commitments, but they're here. You know, they're present.
The one thing I'd love to see, and I know they'll not make public, is not the number of accounts, but the number of unique players. And I'd like to know if the decline that we see in concurrent plays is not we're losing players, but we're losing alts. And
well, that's
losing
the point that I was going to make that I feel like Feyrell sort of touched on, which is that development is a thing, right? And CCP has made a lot of changes that affect what people would use alts for. Like IS Boxer, taken out. So all those alts are gone. They're not being played. And that's considering they were running 30, 40, sometimes 60 accounts at the same time. That's going to affect the PCU a little bit.
Jump range
to
nerf would kill all the Sino alts.
Yeah, range nerf reduced the Sino alts. I think some people were anticipating super caps not being used as much, and just generally, like, super cap fighting in EVE is down a little bit. So, like, there's not tons of incentive for you to keep your super alt subscribed. Like, I have a super carrier. It's not subbed right now because I don't use it for anything. But okay. Like, I'm still playing. Still here, bros. A lot of people were waiting for this new sob system because everyone's anticipating, like, that's when the big war is coming. Even some people I was reading on Reddit, they're like, well, yeah, I've got, like, 9 accounts. They're used for, like, scouting and sinoing and production and hauling and all this other kind of stuff. And then they ended the post with, like, but right now I'm only working with 3 of them because there's no war that's taxing our abilities, like, to the point where I need to make up the difference with extra accounts of my own. Either there's not enough fighting going on or my organization is advanced enough that, like, we can handle it just fine if I'm only doing 3 accounts. I don't need 9 accounts.
And that would show on the graph as a decline in PCU and a decline in kills and that sort of thing, because those characters aren't on.
And generally speaking, I think that's a healthier model for the game. Like, I think CCP has said a couple times, like, they want almost every character to be a person. Like, have a player behind it, a unique player. And I think that's the way to go. That's not how everyone wants to play, and certainly you shouldn't have to play it. But I think the more you go toward that ideal, like, the healthier the game is going to be in general.
Yeah, and wait till links go longer, then you'll see the player count drop.
Yep.
Oh, I so want... I'm serious. And incursion fleets do have off-grid boosters, but I have wanted to see boosters be on-grid for years. You know, if you're going to play it, then put it on the deck and put it out there on the table as something that's either being useful and flying with you or not being active, one or the other.
Yeah, I've always felt they should be on grid and, you know, maybe buff them for the pilot's trouble or give command ships another thing that they can do that's more active and participatory. But they should definitely be on field and fighting. And I think there's definitely a subset of players who are so used to it that they would be resistant to it. But I feel like most reasonable small gang PvPers would appreciate either the challenge of it or the extra targets it would afford.
As someone with a max link alt, I wouldn't mind the change. Like, I use mine occasionally, but it's so common, it's amazing. Like, the other day I was roaming with 3 guys, and between the 3 of us, we had 2 link alts and a falcon alt. I mean, we weren't using them, but they're all there and usable if we like. I mean, it is kind of crazy. It would be nice just to keep 1 max 2 accounts, you know, for other things, not PvP, like indie if you want to do that, or whatever, spy alts, all the things that, you know, should be used, alts should be used for, rather than assisting your main on grid.
And CCP has also gotten better at banning all kinds of bots, market bots, hauling bots. Like, they've been much more aggressive on that front lately, which is also going to affect the PCU count.
One of the things I've asked for the summit, it's one of the options we get, is we can request sessions for the summit upcoming. And then we find out whether we get a request once the schedule gets laid down. But we got asked a while back, what would you like to talk about? And one of the things I said is, I just want to have some time with the metrics guys and talk about, you know, how they measure things and what their numbers are. In other words, see the real numbers. And even if I can't report them out to you guys, again, like I said, the more I know, the better I can advise. The less I know, the more I'm just an average high-sec idiot.
And just to close out this discussion, Pre-Star's talking in chat. The whole group I've been roaming with recently are returning veterans. I mean, could be, of course, coincidence. It's anecdotal evidence, but it seems like a lot of anecdotal evidence that players are coming back, not leaving. I know Feral, he's been away for quite a bit, and now he's back roaming more with Pre-Star and other people.
The game's
getting more interesting.
While we're on this, I linked in chat a while back. Did you see the other Jester post in Reddit? It's entitled Almost Absurdly Funny.
Yeah.
That one cracked me up. Just because of the what CCP appears to be trying to do. You know, we want you to live in space. We want you to fight your neighbors. And then how the players keep finding ways around it. And the last one, Wormhole nerf. Listen, you fuckwits. Conflict, local, live space, smaller fights, grr.
And I read that as well, and I do kind of agree with it. Like, I like where that direction is heading. And it's just so Eve to have, if that is true, mind you, have, you know, CCP's trying to move the game in one direction, and constantly, time after time, patch after patch, players are finding a way to still do what they want to do, despite changes by CCP. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, whether it's true or not, that one, by the time I got to the bottom of it, I was grinning.
I mean, the reason why that's happening, people are constantly trying to get around it, is because the other side of having neighbors to fight is not there yet. That's where the new SOV system and hopefully some packaged economic changes to make 0-0 more attractive relative to HiSec is going to really kick in.
Yep. Sorry, I just wanted to mention that one because it almost feels, you mentioned at the beginning, Rippard, who retired from writing, seems to be writing a lot for somebody who retired lately.
Right.
Moving on.
Moving on. I think that's a good place to end it. No Not Believing update. Victory! Woo! Complete, awesome, not complete, but pretty much everything we wanted to get out of the duality test has been gotten. We just yesterday passed our final vulnerability timer before the end of the contest, unless CCP Fozzy decides to extend it for some reason. Which, considering how low the activity's been recently, I don't know why he would. We had FCON try to make a push at us in the final, literally final hour, final like 30 minutes as a matter of fact, to try to take some of our systems. I just happened to be logged in. I was watching for notifications while I was getting some work done. Saw them try to intosysing stuff. Put the ping out. We flash formed. Mix of Noir's Trust Australian and early European bros and a couple late night dudes from the Pacific West Coast of the United States. I think we got like a 10-man fleet in 20 minutes and just completely forced them off. Defended every structure, no problems. We've got it. We have every system that we started with still. We took several stations and TCUs and IHUBs early on in the competition, which eventually Pandemic Legion, you know, retook, which not much we could do against them, but we did try. Certainly made them work for it. And we're currently have reinforced Stellanova's space, which is a Russian-ish, European-ish, I don't know. Sounds like a Russian name. I don't think they actually are. Definitely European alliance. Our European time zone went in on Friday and reinforced their entire holdings. And tomorrow, which is Sunday, we're going to go in and try to finish them off and hopefully pick up some extra points before the drawing. So we're definitely going to have our name on the description of the Intosis link, and we may, fingers crossed, get our alliance ticker as part of the meta module. So it would be like, for instance, the Trust Compact Intosis link, which I think is fantastic.
Making a footprint in the game is always cool, something that stays there after you're gone.
Gone.
Yeah, he was dying, right?
it'll die when the server shut off. But I'm just so happy because I was really taken with this whole prize concept. Obviously some alliances weren't into it versus some alliances that were really into it. I was definitely in the really into it camp. I got so excited. I feel like it would really help us for advertising, for contracts, for recruitment. Be like right below Pandemic Legion on the description of the blueprint to literally have our alliance ticker every time someone looks at the market to go buy an Intosis link. Be like, oh, hey. That's that SOV Warfare Specialist Mercenary Group. That's cool. Oh,
yep,
I need a SOV Warfare Specialist Mercenary Group. Which one should I go with? How about the one that has the module named after them? You know what I'm saying?
It was worth the effort, is what you're saying.
I feel like it was, yeah. Now, obviously, we haven't won a module yet. There's like a 20% chance or something that we're not going to. which our luck will probably happen. But we really acquitted ourselves pretty well. We fought Defcon, we fought Brave, we fought Spectre briefly, we fought Pandemic Legion like tooth and nail the entire time. And yeah, we acquitted ourselves pretty well. We learned tons. I sort of feel bad for everyone that's going to have like their first experience with the new system when it goes live. There's going to be so much face-palming and just like complete face-planting. Like slapping your face and then jumping face-first onto a concrete floor. Because it's so different.
People, if you didn't take part, I would strongly recommend hiring LXAF's group to give you a lesson in this prior to actually face-palming so that it would be worth hiring a mercenary group just to take you through the ropes, almost as a learning contract rather than a win-solve-for-us contract.
I think that's not a bad suggestion, Mike, because it's the dynamics completely change, and there's a lot of like meta relation to it in terms of like fits. Little quirks of the system that we learn over the course of the fighting. Obviously, I think the Tranquility fighting is going to be a bit different because there's not going to be an infinite number of seated ships.
Yeah, but you're not going to see Panther fleets.
Yeah. So the tools are going to be different, but I think the underlying dynamics are still going to be there. And like I said, we definitely learned a lot about the Entosis module, about attacking things, what tactics were good, what tactics didn't work, how to counter other people's tactics. Definitely going to be interesting.
A classic example, like we had a couple guys scouting, and Slack was popping up with one saying, like, hey, did you guys know that you can just right-click and show info on a system, and it'll show you the Vuln timers? And he's like, I was flying around manually looking at them, and other guys popped up like, yeah, I was doing the same thing. It's like a facepalm.
Yeah, little stuff like that. But yeah, we did it. We achieved the goal, which was to have space at the end of it. The part two of the goal, learning things and you know, really testing ourselves, achieved that. Part three is a bit out of our hands. We did our best to ensure that only four alliances would finish the competition, period. Because, you know, if there's only four alliances and there's four meta modules, then... Yeah, well, we were guaranteed one, 18. Which would have been nice.
Who are the four who, or the five who finished out?
So there's Pandemic Legion, Affirmative, who had a nap with PL going in, so no one hit their space. I don't think they took any additional systems, though. Could be wrong on that. Spectre Fleet, which kept their own space and inherited most of Brave's space after. Pandemic Legion basically hell rolled them. And FCON has managed to keep at least one TCU. They were going to lose all their space, but for whatever reason, there wasn't enough hustle from Spectre to get them out in time, and they managed to recapture a TCU. So now they're going to at least have 1 point. Probably more than 1 point, but certainly much less than they had to start with. And then there's us, and then there's Stellanova, which currently has all the space they've started with plus one system. However, everything they have is reinforced, so you know, by this time tomorrow they could have no space and we could have all of their space. So it'll probably wind up being, you know, if we're successful, it'll probably wind up being Pandemic Legion, Spectre, Noir/Trust, and then Affirmative, and then FCON.
Cool. One
and maybe unchanged. Stella at the bottom there. Not sure.
One thing unchanged is it definitely is still a political game.
Yeah, for sure. People were making deals all over the place, but Fozzie says that was perfectly legal, so.
Well, I'd hope so in a sandbox. I mean.
Spectre Fleet eventually had a nap with PL. Affirmative had a nap with PL going into it. We fought Pandemic Legion tooth and nail for like two and a half weeks, like I said. When it finally became clear that we were FCOM was going to lose all their space, or just about, and that we were the only alliance left that was fighting, Pandemic Legion. I was like, Elise, what's up? And they were, it was a tough deal. They really put us over the rocks, but they agreed to not hit our home constellations when they were rolling everything else. So, and the reason that they did that is because we were out there fighting, making them work for it so much. You know, it was worth it for them to make the deal. So that was cool. We had to give up a lot of the space that we had taken outside the constellation. I think we had to give up like 2 stations, 3 iHubs, and 2 TCUs, something like that. But we managed to keep our seated station and all of our existing stuff, plus we deployed a station in our home constellation, so that's an extra point. And Stella had a nap with Spectre, and the rumor was that they were going to give all their space to Spectre Fleet, but on Friday it became clear that that wasn't going to happen, so I don't know if they backstabbed them or what, but we went in and relieved them of their space, or at least took the first steps to relieving them of their space, and we'll continue that process tomorrow. We tried to stop EFCON from regaining a point, but ultimately it was up to Spectre, and they could not stop them from getting at least 1 TCU. They have taken almost all their stuff, but it just wasn't enough to completely shut them out. Which, you know, adds an element of chance that we're not going to be drawn, but, you know, it's only 1 or 2 points for them, so fingers crossed that everything works out. And, yeah. That's how everything shook out. It's really, very interesting. I do want to mention really quick, I don't usually use the podcast to gloat, but I feel like in this case it's somewhat warranted. Sino, a.k.a. Wino, had some space starting in the SOV competition. They had a constellation, like other people. They named one of their stations Still Better Than Noir. They promptly lost that station to us and then to Pandemic Legion. So, Wino, eat a dick. Also, apparently not. Listener Q&A! What's up? So, we have a listener named Domer, and we have Prestar basically asking the same question, which is, any insight to how the new SOV mechanics will actually play out in the world? Big fleets, little fleets, will trolling structures be the way of life in EVE post-FozzySov? And then there's a follow-up question from Prestar, but let's take this first one. I think little fleets are going to have a much bigger impact. However, they're not going to be the be-all and end-all. One of the most hard-learned lessons of the FozzySov test for us is that we can do great things. We can fight really hard against large capital fleets and, you know, we can cover a lot of ground with a small number of determined pilots, you know, that really want it, are willing to put the time in, and it's much less time than it was before to take a lot more stuff. But at the end of the day, super capitals still run EVE. There were lots of occasions where we reinforced constellations full of systems, and Pandemic Legion would come in there with their initial golem. The golem would try to, like, steal stuff from us, like steal iHubs, steal TCUs. Golem would pop Sino, carriers would come in, we'd bring dreadnoughts in, they would start bringing in super caps. We'd start to bring in ships that are really far away, they'd bring in more carriers to use fighters to kill those things. And it would escalate to the point, or at one point, and this is what really caused me to sit down and talk to Pandemic Legion to make a deal, is they brought enough Titans to literally doomsday every cap pilot we had. And so they would doomsday our dreadnoughts. We'd fly back to station to fit more dreadnoughts to come try to kill the carrier that was entosing our stuff. We would bring the dreads back over. And by the time the dreads were actually able to get there, their doomsdays were back up again, and the dreads would get popped before they could even take the carrier into half armor. So, end of the day, super caps still extremely strong. But, you know, they have their limits. Spectre Fleet tried to use regular caps against us in fairly great numbers, but we were able to... It was a node fight, not a TCU fight. And in node fights, we learned that things are much more spread out and dynamic. If you bring caps to one node, You could just fly to like the 5, 6, 7, 8 other nodes and start taking those instead. So what we would do is we'd, you know, try to take a node. They would warp, like an Abaddon, a heavy interdictor, an Archon, and all this stuff, and Marauders to it. And then we go, okay, and we just leave. And then they would try to warp those subcap ships to chase us. We would kill the subcap ships. Until finally there was just like, you know, the Archons were there. They would bring in a second Archon, so we definitely couldn't kill them. But they couldn't really stop us from doing things. We were still flying around and capturing nodes. So there's a lot more counterplay available, but they're still extremely strong. In any kind of single point fight, like a onlining TCU or an onlining iHub, or trying to reinforce an iHub, TCU, or station, they are going to be extremely powerful tools for the people that want to use them.
I think realistically, as a small group, I mean, you're not going to have Pandemic Legion within 8 jumps of where you live. I think as a small group in deep Null, you probably have a better chance with how lucrative it might be. You know, I'm not really sure, but it's definitely, it's easier than it would have been with current mechanics.
By far. And I think it is worth saying that, like, you're going to have a lot of super capital fleets flying around in EVE, but you're not going to have people that are throwing them around so casually as PL was on the test server, because there was no one that could kill their fleet on the test server. Whereas on the actual server, you know, if you put 5 Titans on an iHub with no supporting subcap fleet, someone can bubble them for like 2 hours, and eventually, you know, a larger group is going to come by and swallow them up, or at least kill one of them. And how many Titan losses can they really sustain? So it just doesn't scale.
As far as trolling structures comes, like in part of his question, I mean, I guess it really depends on your definition of trolling structures. Like on the test server, we saw a lot of oversized prop mod cruisers, so 500 MN Vagabonds and Orthruses and stuff like that orbiting at long range with a Tech Twintosis link. So is that really trolling? Because like that ship, if you're equipped, you can kill them. But it's not a cheap loss, you know what I mean? It's not like you're throwing an interceptor at it. And I think interceptors with Tech 1 and Tosis will be extremely easy to kill. So as far as like trolling structures with Tosis links, I don't really see that as viable.
Yeah, so the troll scepter, I don't think is going to be a thing. People tried it to start out with, and it quickly fell out of favor. They just weren't effective enough. They couldn't hold enough Strat. They couldn't lock far enough to really make use of the Tech 2 and Tosis link. I mean, sure, people were trying it, but like it was so easy to kill them, either with another interceptor or anything that could head out to like 100 clicks, like an Eagle, Cerberus. It was just so easy to force them off the field. But 500 MN Vagabond is a much tougher bird to catch, but we were fighting against them last night with EFCON, and it became readily apparent that, like, well, duh. I mean, eventually we just figured out their orbits and we positioned ships with electronic warfare and tackle, like, in their path. So eventually one flew within, like, 20 clicks of me. I got 2 nude cycles on him and a curse. He slowed down. An interceptor caught up to him. Scram web. He has undersized guns and no tackle of his own, because otherwise he wouldn't be able to do what he's doing. And we just melted him. And, like, boom. If you're on the actual server, that's 250 mil down the drain. So, plus this guy had snake implants. You're probably not going to have snake implants. Not reliably on the actual server. I think the cruisers are probably going to be more common. I think trolling in terms of like going around and just intosising people's stuff for shits and giggles is probably going to be a thing initially. And I think it'll wear down eventually. And it might be more effective against larger entities than smaller entities. And at the end of the day, okay, Troll Scepter goes in, reinforces your TCU. Well, okay, it's going to spawn nodes. It'll take you literally 100 minutes to get it back. It'll spawn 5 nodes. You can capture them in 10 minutes. Oh, I guess it'll only take 20 minutes. Yeah. 5 nodes, capture them in 10 minutes with 5 people, one on each node, then another 5 will spawn, and again, same 5 people, capture it. So, that troll person is trying to take your stuff. If you're active in the system and it's not completely abandoned, it's going to take them longer to entosis it than it's going to take you to repair it. You're going to have to spend more people to do it. But it's not super time economical, especially if they're taking ship losses on top of it. So I'm not super convinced that it's actually going to be a thing unless it's part of a larger strategy of like a goon swarm where they have so many people. They have plenty of people to put on this and, you know, you like they're leveraging their manpower in some way. But I think most people, it's just not going to be worth it unless they plan to seriously make a play for the nodes that spawn after. Or like we probably will do is cause nodes to spawn and then use that as an opportunity to kill ships. Because they're going to have to come out and entosis those things. And when they entosis, they can't warp anywhere or be repped. So they're going to be easy pickings.
And you also hope that even before it gets to that point of spawning nodes, that when a group comes, a small gang, say, is roaming around and rolls up to your station and starts entosising it, whether it's the station or something else or part of the fitting, whatever the things are called, I can't remember exactly.
Fitting service. Oh, that's the,
all the services.
That's
yeah,
going to get for days.
I mean, you'd hope that would force a fight. You'd hope that'd be a good conflict driver. I think that's the desired outcome that they're going for. I mean, if you're a small group or a medium group in a Sov-holding alliance and you've got some dudes there, why not undock and give them a fight? It's going to save you time down the road having to entosis those nodes that spawn or counter-entosis your services that have been incapped, basically. So give the guys a fight. Like, have some ships that are equipped to deal with either oversized MWD cruisers or whatever they're using. Just give them a fight. Like, most of the guys that are going to be doing the so-called troll entosising, when it's not a large organized group doing it, they're just going to be out there looking for a fight. So just give them a fight, and then they're going to leave, and you can go back to ratting or mining or whatever it is you're doing.
Sleeping.
Sleeping, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, very good points. So now to Pre-Star's point. This one is a little more nuanced. Do you think it will be possible for 10 to 50 man corps to take and hold small amounts of lucrative Sov? That's a tough one. Exactly as phrased, no, probably not.
That comes down to how you define lucrative.
Right.
That's
all it is. If it's a lucrative piece of space, I feel like the larger alliances will probably coalesce around those areas. And thus, it's going to be very hard for a 10 to 50 man corp to fight them. But, will they be able to take and hold small amounts of Sov, period? Like, in general? 10 man corp? Probably not. 50 man corp? Yeah, I think so. For sure.
Especially if it's like a one time zone corp, if those 50 members are all in the EU or AU or US time zone or whatever the case, then I would say for sure. But I mean, really, I think 0-0 in general is going to need a bit of a change for that to happen, because it just won't be worth it, I think. I mean, if you're in deep null, where you now have to import, you now have to move your jump freighter countless jumps through enemy territory, enemy space, where you cannot dock. You know, is it really worth it for a small group? I probably don't think so. I'm not a 0-0 bear, but I don't think he'd be making the amount of ISK that would justify doing it, all the hassle.
Yeah, the economic side I'm less sure about. There's still a lot of economic incentives to be in wormhole space, to be in high sec space, compared to the amount of work that it would take you to take and hold. But on the pure military side of things, I think if you can field an 11-man fleet, you probably have a fair shot at holding a system. If you want it, the question is, do you want it enough to field an 11-man fleet potentially every night of the week?
And that also begs the question of why do you want to hold it? Coming back to lucrative, what makes Sov holding worth it, especially given that there may be these reavers coming through. So putting up construction areas is going to be a high risk unless you're well behind walls of good intel and that sort of thing. Little guys, how are they going to be? Why would they want to hold Soff aside from having their name on a temporary map?
Well, that's a question I don't have an answer for. That's certainly fun to an extent. Maybe if it positions you well to take R6-4 as you wouldn't otherwise be able to take, that could be a thing. Maybe the area of space is not terribly populated, so there's less people hunting you than you would be in LoSec if you moved out there. You know, I feel like there could be reasons. I definitely feel like CCP has more to do on the economic side of things. Or the like social / emotional investment side of things to make it worth it or more interesting to take space. But, you know, one problem at a time. They tried to do a little bit on that on the economic side of things. Probably not enough, but they did something. Then they're making it a lot easier to take space. And I think the next step is, okay, see how that shakes out. And then go back and tweak the economic side of things a little bit more, depending on how things shake out with the Fozzy soft patch.
Wait to see how one happens before you make huge plans for the next.
Exactly. Now, I hope they have plans to go back and tweak the economic side of things. That would be, I guess, a CSM responsibility to keep their feet on the fire about that. Mike?
I'm only in for another few, 8 months or 9 months, then I'm out of here. But, yeah.
Well, I hope they take a look at it within 6 months.
Once this kicks in, then they really got to look at it. Me, I almost wish there was something new, you know, anything new rather than the same old, same old. So that the dynamics change. Something like, the drag, and this is just something off the top of the head, comet mining. If there was a horde of comets going through various areas at various times, so this month, this area of space has a huge influx of materials if it wants it, if it goes out and picks it up. But then it's going to be moving. If you went from north to south and all the money drifted north to south at the same time, then space would be a dynamic. It wouldn't be, we can map it out, we know where it's valuable, and nobody wants Proviblock.
Yeah, comet mining was a thing. It was in one of the proposals for the Odyssey patch, I think so. It was in a lot of CSM proposals. It's a pretty interesting idea, right? You throw down a comet, and then it like it's in one system for a certain period of time, and then another system for another period of time, and like you can track it and continue to mine the materials out of it. But at the same time, it's also a conflict driver because you can predict where it's going, and when it comes to your area, you probably want that money too. That's certainly a thing. I think slight tweaks to ratting could be a thing. Maybe slight tweaks to spawn drops for some of the more valuable stuff, like implants, maybe now that jump clones are different. And also, more ways players can invest, even if it's not just they're getting raw ISK out of it, but like more ways to customize space. I think certainly the anchorable structures that are coming out are going to be part of that. But more things that are sort of SOV-specific or maybe SOV-enhanced, such that if you want like this next level gameplay or next level thing related to this one particular item, like you need a system where you own some space or parts of space to enhance the flavor, enhance the capability.
In other words, a reason for SOV again.
Right. Beyond just economics. And beyond just putting your flag down, because just putting your flag down is cool. A lot of people want to do that. But it's also a, hey, there's a new person on our border, let's go crush them kind of thing. And with the new system completely dissociating the iHub, the TCU, and the station from one another, where you can have someone that, quote, owns the system with a TCU, and like it says, this is Pandemic Legion space, but like the iHub and the station are owned by somebody else. Like, you can do more things and tie them to different parts of the SOV system. So it's more like, okay, well, we want lots of TCUs, because if we have TCUs, we can do this thing. or we want lots of iHubs because we want to farm the space, or we want stations because we want to be able to control things strategically. You know, and just like have that diversity there, and then players can make their own choices. But, you know, I think the choices are only meaningful if they're distinct. And I feel like that's where some of the problem lies right now. If that makes any sense.
Yep.
One thing's for sure, I think FozzySov is probably the single biggest change that's going to happen. Talking about Eve's dying, I mean, not that if it went poorly it would die, but I think FozzySov is huge. Like, they need to nail this more than anything else.
It's a big risk, I'll give you that.
Yep, but it's also the thing everyone's been asking for, and I feel like it's probably the best shot to get those returning players back in, and at the same time lower the barrier to newer players to break into that area of the game. Like, without a doubt, like, smaller numbers of lower SP pilots, infinitely more impactful under the new system than they were before. Like, I mean, I wish I had more NAR Academy people. I don't know how often Orionis has been around, but Orionis, do you mind, like, saying a few words about, you know, so you're in NAR Academy, obviously you're not the most skill-pointed person, not the most experienced, but I know you've been around active for a lot of fleets. Can I unmute you and you give a few words about how this was from a new player perspective? I don't know if he's still here. All right, looks like he went AFK. If he comes back, we're going to unmute him and give the sort of the low SP perspective on things. But I think they're going to be much stronger than before. Much, much stronger. Because E-War can counter a lot of the popular, like the 150 MN, 500 MN cruisers that are coming out. Like, all it takes is a damp to shut that down. And new players can do damps. You know, node capping is going to require pilots in a lot more distributed areas. All you have to do is, like, fit a T1 and Tosis Link. You're fine for that. Like, you can do SOP stuff more than just scouting. More than just, like, being rift or tackle. Alright, next question. Domer asks, as a wormhole bear, I'm most concerned with POS replacement, aka citadels. Any discussion of citadel capture mechanics and how that may play out in wormholes? I was planning on skipping this question because I feel like we don't know enough about how those capture mechanics are going to work. But I wanted to see if Mike had any insight into this question or thoughts behind this question, since you were involved in sort of like the high-level discussion of what these things are supposed to bring to the table.
Well, you know me, I can't say anything directly because that would be NDA, but I can tell you for sure that much as Corpex crossed the aisle and became a goon, he is still right on top of the wormhole stuff and asking questions like this of CCP on a regular basis. Like, I don't see him complaining about SOV as much as I see him always on top of the wormhole stuff. Whether I know anything else, that I can't say.
All right. And he asks again, his last question. Large SOV-holding entities are mapping wormhole chains in order to move fleets without jump fatigue. How far will this go? Will there be superhighways for force projection that last less than 24 hours? And if so, is that really viable? I feel like Feyrol has things to say about this.
Well, yeah, I kind of do. I mean, so it's a really good way for fleets to move around, and not just on large scale. Well, mainly small scale, but not just small scale, and large scale as well, as we've seen mainly from Pandemic Legion. I mean, you see battle report after battle report pop up with their Tech 3 fleet murdering people. I even had a friend that's in PL say to me, we were chatting, and he said, dude, basically, we're like the boogeyman of Eve. This group, I can't remember which group he named, it was in some Series Zero conflict, literally just stood down their fleet because they think we're in a wormhole near them. Like, they didn't have them scouted. They just had some loose intel that they were in a wormhole near them, and they literally stood down their fleet. So that's, like, that's feeding right into my opinion of it. On the large scale, is I don't think it's good for the game. It's basically countering what previous patches, like Phoebe, obviously, would be the largest, have been trying to do, and that's minimize force projection, making Eve large again. And those big wormholes that are going through, like a lot of them are in C5 chains. There's K to K space, large wormholes that you can fit large fleets through. But especially if you get into that C5 highway of wormholes, there's holes that last, you know, 24 hours that are big enough to support a large Tech 3 fleet. And in my opinion, that on that scale, it's not very good for the game. And, you know, in the recent patch notes, this is getting changed. It doesn't say what, but it says that there are changes to these wormholes. I'd like to see what that change is going to be, but I really like it on the small scale, being able to roam around and just go mess with smaller groups looking for fights. I don't use it as a large scale, and people that do use it probably won't agree with me on a large scale, but I don't think it's very good for the game in that respect.
I think it's a risk-reward kind of thing. They do
effort
only
reward.
Last for a certain amount of time, so...
Oh, for
yeah.
Sure. Those groups have scouts out mapping every day, don't get me wrong, but so do many wormhole groups. And in an alliance of, you know, 1,500, 2,000 plus people, having an alt scan down chains isn't really that difficult.
No, but it's an extra level of thing, right? And it does require some fleet movement. It's not like they can just Titan from A to B with no risk or movement in between. You know, they're breaking up into smaller chunks to go through the wormholes. They could be fought onto the way to the wormhole and on the way back, and unless they're literally getting a wormhole from the place where they're at to the place where they want to be, then they got to move it somewhere, and they can get bomb run, they can get ganked, they can get ambushed. I feel like there's more risk. Mike?
Sorry, I'm agreeing with you, Alex. I just was rude for a moment. Apologies, I'm not Canadian for that small moment. I also said that if it's a large or even a medium-sized chain, you run the risk of somebody rolling one of the holes along the way, and then you're way the hell in the back end of nowhere. You're the boogeyman, but you haven't got a way home unless somebody scouts another one. Wormholes are a random thing. You're not guaranteed the superhighway will be paved the whole day.
That's very true. I do like the concept, I just think it should be a little more random, maybe.
That's fair, and maybe the larger wormhole should be less frequent or something like that, but I really don't see it as a massive problem. Like, on the other hand, it does empower smaller groups to, like, get out to deep 0-0, and post-Fazisov, you know, that's an interesting proposition, because now you can get out there with your fleets, your dreads, and not have to, like, cut a path through 40 jumps of Sov that's controlled by, you know, larger entities to get at that soft renter underbelly. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it also makes borders almost, unless they lessen it somewhat, it does make borders almost immaterial. There's no such thing as a defensive border or even defensive intel if they can pop in anytime they want in your backyard.
Yep, but at the same time, that's somewhat limited because, you know, you can see wormholes in your own space, you can scout them and scout where they go. Yeah, there's lots of counterplay there. It's not like they're just suddenly appearing, although it could seem that way, but you have the ability to close them. Like Priest, yeah, Priestar makes a good point. You can scout them, you can scout where they go, you can use them offensively for on your own end, you can close them if you don't want them there. And, you know, you can also close them up behind the enemy and trap them in your space if you want to do that instead. There's lots of counterplay there. I think it's much less unhealthy than Titan Bridge highways.
Oh, absolutely. Even at its worst, it's less unhealthy.
We have Orionis back. Orionis, could you maybe say a few words about your perspective as a lower SP player and sort of your ability to impact things in the post Fazisov system on the test server, giving you talk power now?
I can speak out of perspective on it, yes.
Yeah, we'd love to.
Basically, new players are going to be far much more impactful in this new Zoff mechanic. I mean, due to the fact that, you know, there's going to be a big influx of newer players who, you know, who want to band together, who want to say, like, they want to try and take Zoff. They're going to have a lot more impact against these larger alliances who can't spread out as much. So, yeah, from a lower SP's perspective, I think the new Zoff mechanics is going to be a thing, well, how could I put it exactly? It's going to be almost a dream come true if you're a lower end corp that wants to get space.
And how did you feel like on field as a lower SP pilot when you were actually like in the fleets? People are capping nodes, they're fighting, they're doing all this soft stuff. How did it, like, in a very, like, gut sense, how did it feel for you?
It felt absolutely amazing. It felt absolutely amazing to be in something so coordinated.
Alright, awesome. Well, there you have it, guys. New player friendly, thumbs up. Thanks, Arinus. That's from someone with 32 million skill points. And he's in Nora Academy. He's learning how to be a PvPer right now, like take his PvP game to the next level. And that's about as new a player perspective as you're going to get in terms of pilots that participated in the soft stuff, because Brave got their shit kicked in straight away.
Yeah, I don't think Brave's opinions would be similar to Orionis's.
Yeah, Brave obviously not happy with the new soft system, but probably not for the right reasons. CSM Corner. We have a few things to talk about now that we have Mike back with us.
Yep.
Always good when you're on the show, Mike. Trying to make that a more regular thing.
Well, life happens.
Life does happen. But as it happens, we have a lot of stuff backed up in this particular area of the podcast that we want to talk to you about. Because we haven't been able to like talk at your face for a while. So Turla, I think, put down a few of these, and then I've got a few other ones.
And I put down some, too.
Okay. So the first one listed is Threadnoughts. Who wants to start that one off?
That I type that in, because that covers a lot of these things. Is the devs have been announcing things, and every time they announce, do a little dev blog and go, type here for comments. People have been a lot more active in the posts in the forum lately. And a lot of these things have taken off and just gone full Threadnought. The first one that you got there, the UI, ran 80, 90 pages on the initial one. And then they said, okay, we've made these changes. Here's the new comment thread. That ran up into the 20s inside of a day. So we're getting a lot of active feedback. And for those of you who wonder, yes, CCP reads the feedback. No, they're not going to answer every damn one of you, because if they did, they'd never get any dev done. You know, there's a choice. I can read this and try to make changes or decide on it, or I can spend my entire day in the forums. So Threadnoughts is kind of the common to a lot of these things that the players got into. There's only one of these subjects that you put in here. UI was one of them. Fleet Warp has been a fairly strong thread. The new player experience and attributes has been running fairly strongly. CCP Rise just posted that the devs are thinking and discussing attributes. But do you got anything? Let's start from the top. So UI brackets, UI overall. What do you guys think?
So I've not been a huge fan of the new brackets. Obviously, learning anything new is hard, especially when it's been so the same way for so long. But I found it very difficult to distinguish between ship classes and between ships and wrecks, to the point where I actually had to add a color to player ships so I could distinguish them, like when I was flying around in space. So that part has made things very difficult. I definitely would appreciate more differentiation there. The old system wasn't awesome, but like you could sort of tell, okay, this is like a diamond, like a baseball diamond. That's a wreck. That's a square. Okay, so that's a player. Generally speaking, the bigger the square, the bigger of a problem it's going to be for me. I don't feel like we've gotten that level of information conveyed with the new brackets. So I'm not sure what all updates and what the final state of them currently is, but certainly the initial iteration was left a lot to be desired.
I almost disagree with you on one thing there, Alex. I find that there's the squares only told me something if I had another square to compare it to. When you had squares in individuality, I had difficulty telling whether it was a cruiser or a Desi or a battle cruiser unless other ships were there, and then I'd say, oh, there's little ones, medium ones, and big ones. Okay, I know which one to shoot first. So I'm old and my eyes aren't that good, whereas now there is a shape differential, so it's not I need a comparison to be able to tell the difference between a frig, a Desi, and a cruiser, for example.
Well, there's just one thing there. Just look at it and see what ship it is.
Yeah,
they're
it
really
does
only
have
super
a learning
useful
curve.
When there's plenty of stuff around.
It does have a learning curve, and I think that's the biggest issue is, and one of the things they're looking at is whether the new players are finding the overview as difficult as the old players are. Is it that it's a bad overview, or just that we've all spent so many years with the old one that we learned how it works? It's kind of like driving a junker car where the you know where second gear is, but if anyone else gets in it, they think it's shit. And then you get in a new car and you can't shift because the clutch isn't exactly the same depth. You actually can feel it go into second as opposed to know it's 3 inches off your knee and 2 inches back. Are we complaining because it's change, or are we complaining because it's changed to the worse?
Change to the worse, I think. There's just too much nuance. So yeah, it's easier to tell between like a frig and a destroyer, but that's really not like all that important when you can't tell like things that are ships and things that aren't ships.
I totally agree with that. And also things that are ships and things that are drones. That's one that's been bugging me.
Oh yeah, definitely.
I mean, personally, when I look at in space and see those brackets, I'm not really looking at what they are. I already know what's on grid for my overview. And I know the difference between a frig and a Desi, or a cruiser and a Desi, or whatever, through that. All I care is where I am in proximity to something on my brackets. So as long as there's some kind of icon there, I don't really care. I think it is a little crazy. I mean, there is some logic to it. At least you got points and you got blunt ends. And pointy ends are dangerous, and blunt ends are Care Bear ships, basically. And the more points something has, the bigger it is, basically. Like Titans, if you count all the points on their icon, they have the most.
I think part of
it is... But
that's
only useful if the drone and wreck situation is solved.
Yeah, that's true. I agree with that. And loaded and not loaded. And as you pointed out, Alec, NPC versus player character. There needs to be a really fast differentiation between those two. So is it perfect? No. Does it need iteration? Yes. Does it need replacement and go back to the old way? No. I like the direction that they're going. I just don't think they're all the way there yet.
It doesn't have to go back to the way like it used to be, but like make it customizable and actually just let us pick our own brackets, because we probably know better than you, CCP.
Editable brackets is one thing, but not... we were joking, and I actually tweeted this about 2 weeks ago. Would it ruin the game if you could actually choose what the icons were for yourself, like have it as an on your computer file? So I want my frigates to look like the little guys from Asteroids, or you know what I mean? Like literally choose my own icons. And somebody just commented, you know, what would be the time to penis?
I was just going to say, like, I can imagine somebody creating a file set where, like, frigates are a completely flaccid penis, and then like tactic cruisers are like a nice strong throbbing erection, and then super capitals are just like black silicocks.
Really though, you could have the thorax be the, you know, floppy one, and then an avatar would be full chub.
So you know, there is, and one of the reasons why, and I once they pointed that out, they said, remember, there are people who Twitch stream the game, and this would be what new people or outsiders would see our game as, and is that how we want to actually present it?
Well, no.
Yeah,
that
I think of all the customizable things, bracket's probably the least practical.
Not customizable as in, like, you can pick your own stuff, but, like, give us a set of icons to pick from, like, and then you can just set them up however you want. If you want a frigate to be a triangle, make it a triangle. If you want it to be a square, or like, however, just get to choose it that way. I mean, I think that whole idea of like picking your own picture is pretty stupid and unrealistic. Not really like what at all was on hand, but
I understand that. And sometimes I think some people just want, I want the NPCs to be this shape and the player characters to be that shape. Personally, I don't look at icons. I have the name of what the ship is in on my overview, and I tend to sort that way and read it that way when I'm working, so I'm not that icon dependent except for a quick glance.
All right.
But then I'm a stinking Care Bear. Next one on the list was fleet warp changes. And yeah. I'm kind of curious how you guys reacted to that one.
I think the opinions might actually differ wildly. For myself, I thought the nerf was a little too strong, but I saw what they were going for, and I like it in principle, but in terms of like actually leading a fleet, I think it's going to make things kind of awkward to do. I'd be interested to hear what Turtle thinks of it, because he's more in fleets where this is a thing. I usually struggle to have a combat prober in my fleet because we don't have the dudes.
I mean, I guess I get what they were going for. Like, trying to change some stuff. It's just like, my biggest thing with it is that you didn't create an environment where, like, a new tactic will emerge. Really, what you just did is create an environment where now there's a workaround that requires the FC to do a little bit more work, because realistically, they're going to want to have the combat prober too, so like, it just makes more work for one person in terms of the workaround to keep things the way they are, because, I mean, that's going to be the real goal.
I think the biggest impact it's going to have is on dynamic bomber fleets, basically, like setting up bomb runs dynamically. I mean, statically, you can have perch bookmarks there that everyone can warp to beforehand, as long as they're in your corp.
The hit I see it hitting the worst is on the NPSI communities.
Oh, for sure. I mean, they don't have the luxury, because they originally weren't going to be able to fleet warp to bookmarks, correct? But now they changed it and you will be able to? Is that right?
Yeah, the biggest thing now is all that's really left is that you can't warp a fleet to probe results, basically.
Yeah.
And that's going to affect a lot of different kind of things, like, yeah, and PSI and bombing runs and, like, on-grid combat probing, especially.
And the slippery peats.
So is that, just spring off that, is that going to open up a bit more of an allowance for sniper fleets? Ones that aren't hard to probe?
I can't really see how. So, like, it'll take an extra, like, 10 seconds to get on top of them. But it's still not a lot of time for a battleship to, like, land, lock, fire, warp off. So I don't... It seems like a lot of extra work and frustration for not a lot of tactical richness added back to the game.
But like you said, you did see where they were going, and it wasn't... A lot of people took it personally and said, you are trying to nerf my lifestyle, as opposed to they're trying to nerf one person doing all the play and everybody else just passively along for the ride.
That's kind of like a myth, though. Like, in a lot of scenarios, like, that one person flying a 200-man fleet, like, that is, like, probably one of the most pervasive nullsec myths there really is.
It is and it isn't. Like, a Lazarus Tel Raven or an Elo Knight is absolutely doing that.
But those are, like, the outliers. Like, those are the extreme examples. Like,
sure.
There's a whole lot of other people that don't operate that way.
Yeah, and absolutely.
But if they don't operate that way, then this wouldn't affect them.
It does, though.
It does, though.
Like, if you can't fleet warp your fleet around to bookmarks and stuff. Or have the... I mean, it's not even just fleet warping them around. It's that now your fleet can't even see it to warp to it, is my understanding of it.
Yeah, one thing I did when I was flying with... I think at the time it was Bomber's Bar. This was before Spectre Fleet. Was when we went into a system that we were going to hunt in for a while. The FC took us on a real fast tour of... He'd warp off, we'd warp to him, bookmark this, okay, this is the label you give. And he literally toured us through bookmarks that we used for the rest of the day. And so it didn't mean that, so he didn't fleet warp us at any time. He said warp to the 300 perch left, or the 100 perch top on that gate, and we would all be in the same spot if we were paying attention. So it meant more preparation, but it also meant that everybody was active or else they were staying behind.
Yeah, and it's much easier to... Not easier. Well, it's more efficient in terms of small gang warfare to run a fleet that way because you have less circumstances where you fleet warp somebody, but that require they were like flying away in a different direction and all of a sudden they have to like slow down and turn around and maybe they get caught. But at the same time, when you're trying to warp to probes, like now you have to get the prober there, get a tackler on top of the prober, and then get your fleet on top of the tackler. And like really extends that process.
The biggest one that bugs me right now is the inability to fleet warp cuts the ability to arrive en masse for a fleet.
I was just going to bring that up. When you have mixed warp speeds in your fleet.
Yeah, and I actually have asked of the devs, I can't tell you what the answer was, but I'm always allowed to tell you what I ask in a conversation. I just can't tell you what they said, is the ability to dial your own fleet speed, warp speed. And then, but then I immediately said, yes, there's abuse of this because you could spend, you could actually treat warp as a safe. If I can put my interceptor down to 0.1 AU per second going along warp, I can walk away from my computer for half an hour.
Yeah. On the other end, though, like, it's actually not the worst thing to have large fleets not all arriving on time.
It means more work for somebody, and I'm waiting for somebody to build some sort of spreadsheet that would let you say, if we want to travel 15 AU and we have these three or five different classes, who moves first? And I have seen staged warp. That's used in incursions all the time, where you send one group in, count to 10, send the next group in, that sort of thing. So it might be, even to do it rough and ready, you send in tackle and... But before the tackle goes in, you send in the heavy shooters, and then the tackle takes off and still arrives just before the heavy shooters do it. It'll take some skill, but skill is a cool thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm fine with all that. I would love to see more like a, if you're probing something down there, like a broadcast warp to, and then people can warp to that on their own if you're going to take away the fleet warp. Yeah. Like, so you still have to be active, you still have to participate, but you're also not like... sidelined for so long, basically. Plus, in people that are bouncing safes, it's now going to be almost impossible to catch them.
Yeah, and like I said, slip repeats are damn hard to catch at the best of times.
Well, and they're a direct response to, like, this whole scenario, too.
Like, yeah, but slip repeats have been around for how long? You can't say they're a response to the fleet warp.
No.
They are. Well, they're the response to probing.
Yeah,
because... Go ahead, Daryl.
No, I was just going to say, they're the response to what the problem is that this is trying to address.
But there's still going to be a thing.
Yeah, so like, nothing's
the
changed
solution
if that's
to the
what
slip
you're
repeat,
trying to fix.
The solution to the slip repeat was never to probe them and warp on top of them. It's just to shoot them out of the sky from where you're at. Just fit ships to do that.
Sniper fit.
Yeah, and counter-snipe them because their tanks are crap.
Or have a spy fit the wrong type of ECCM.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, can we move on to the next one?
Yes, gladly. New tickets. This is just a minor thing, but I thought it worth mentioning. There's no more in-game tickets. It's all going to this new
And that
system.
One bugs me.
Does it?
Well, I understand it's a new ticket system. They're using Zendesk and that sort of thing, and it's going to be a more efficient backend. But if something is going wrong in-game, having to go out of game, I'm not talking about breaking immersion, but I'm just saying... It's a step that might be that one step that keeps people from complaining about things that do need fixing.
If it needs fixing, they're probably going to be motivated enough to go outside it. I think it's going to reduce frivolous claims, which will be great.
Yeah, might do that.
I think the downside is I don't know how this is going to interact with like crash reporting and being able to submit data from the game to the company.
That's an interesting one. I don't know. Well, you can always take screenshots when you're crashing and then send the screenshot. Print screen,
but CCP
folks.
Has historically never accepted that kind of thing. Screenshots or video or anything like that.
Oh, they do.
So
want
they may
to
update
nothing.
That policy.
They did in the like actual bug reporting tool, though. Which I get what you're saying, Mike. It's like another step to people, you know, doing... something helpful, and the more steps you put in there,
the less
eventually
helpful.
Less, yeah, it's helpful they're going to be exactly. So why complicate it in that way? But I hear you.
But the good
I think
news
the reason
is,
to why complicate it is because Zendesk is a much more efficient way to like track these petitions, and it's going to result in probably less, hopefully less petitions.
And
people
faster
have to do
turnover.
This extra work. Yeah, exactly. Faster turnaround. when you petition something, you're going to get that response, and it's going to be a lot easier for them to keep track of GM rulings and things like that, which has historically been a problem for them. So increasing the consistency of the GM department is going to be a thing.
And I think that's a fair exchange. Just because I don't like one aspect of it doesn't mean I'm against it as a whole. It just means that step. I liked being able to occasionally, like I've used petition for usually racist or real assholes in rookie chat. I've just called them out and all of a sudden they vanish.
Certainly, perhaps some kind of slimmed down thing, like for specific actions, like spammers or botters or something like that.
Well, they still could have the one thing, for but... ISK spammers is still in there.
Yeah, so something like that. Probably still okay. But generally speaking, you know, you're corresponding via email and out of game anyway. Or at least often enough that I don't think this is going to be a huge deal. If anything, I actually feel good about it because reduced turnaround time and greater consistency have been major problems. So to have those issues finally being addressed, if the price is, okay, well now I need to tab out or use the in-game browser instead of, you know, something on the Neocom. Okay.
Yeah, I'm fine. It's livable.
Yeah, totally.
Okay. I'm going to drive on to the next thing. I might skip the last two in general, but this is the one thing I want to emphasize. I'm the CSM who spends the most time cruising the general discussion forums and a few others. And so I'm battle hardened. I've got calluses on my calluses. But the one thing I emphasize over and over is the right way and wrong way to ask for help. Swearing at the devs and telling them that does it, I quit. Why would they bother fixing something for somebody who's going to be gone by the time it's fixed? Why would they bother engaging in a conversation with somebody who's already positive that you are wrong and an asshole? So I don't want to talk to somebody like that. I'm fairly sure the devs skim those or read the first sentence where they go, you fucking idiot, and then that's as much as they read of that one. Pardon the language. You can beat me out if you want to. If you want to ask for help, I've seen some really good writers who say, this is bad and this is why, and they give reasons. This would be a reasonable alternative. They give reasons. This would be a good compromise, and they give reasons or give suggestions. And those things I know that the devs spend time on. They mention it to us in the sideline chats and that sort of thing. Even link some suggestions that they've seen in forums and in Reddit. Now, Reddit's in the middle of having a meltdown right now, so I don't know how much they're reading it, but there is a, if you present it as a logical thing and say, this is going to hurt these people in this way, not just, thanks a lot for screwing up the game, I quit, you will get a lot better response, period. People who can be reasonable, who can actually state a good argument, are listened to. People who are busy foaming at the mouth and grabbing pitchforks and lighting themselves on fire are going to be watched as an amusing car accident that you're driving by, but they're not going to be listened to.
I think the biggest thing is to just, the general rule is portray your opinions as if you were speaking to that dev in real life. You know, the internet's so easy at letting people just be spurging idiots and, you know, act in a totally different way than they would normally. And, you know, if it's something serious enough to complain that hard, portray your opinion like you were in person with that dev, like you were at a player meet chatting with them. You know, how would they respond if someone walked up to them at FanFest or EVE Down Under or EVE Vegas or whatever and just started screaming like, you fucked my game, like, you know, I don't think they'd respond very well, and some of the bigger ones might just take a good swing at you.
And if you start yelling at some of the smaller ones, they would just call security, or a whole bunch of players who happen to like that dev would kind of turn up and say, you need a quick lesson on social interaction. Come with us, please.
Right.
So I'm just emphasizing, feedback is great. Talking to, and the same thing goes for us. You guys chat amongst yourselves. Just give me one second, okay?
You got it. I think he makes good points. You know, I deal with player support stuff at my work. You know, you have to be professional at all times, but it definitely does not help your argument when, like, you start off with, well, I'm going to quit. Because then it's like, well, already I don't care about you. Because, you know, you sort of took... You've taken yourself out of the community of people that I'm responsible to talk to now. You're just some asshole.
Exactly. And really, the player opinions you should care for the most are the people that support the game. Like, you know, if I'm going to be inactive for a couple months due to real life, I don't unsub. A lot would have to happen for me to, you know, unsub. Maybe a few alt accounts and stuff like that here and there, but my main accounts, you know, they're not getting turned off, that's for sure.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, and like, you clearly want to come back and play, you know, so like, if I'm CCP, I'm much more concerned with you, a faithful player who's played for a long time, have some concerns or have an issue. I'm much more concerned with listening to you than someone who's come in, played for maybe 2 years, and throws up a hissy fit after every little change. And it's like, well, I'm just gone. You change this one thing, I'm leaving. It's like, well, not a lot of other people are doing that. And the ones that are staying are really happy with the change. So, sorry? Question mark? And bye.
Yeah, sorry about that. Phone calls for somebody else, but I had to run the phone.
You ruined everything!
I know, I'm sorry, man!
Get out!
Go back to just doing the good, the bad, and the ugly.
I gotta give you props on that 1998 ringtone.
No, that's actually a desk phone.
Oh my god. Like,
I'm an old man, don't give me any shit. Get
I know
off
we make
my lawn.
Jokes about your age, but
55 going on 56. Anyways, the other thing I want to say, the same thing goes for writing to us CSM, is if you give us a really good argument with anecdotes, with expected outcomes, that sort of thing, that's the stuff we can take to the devs. If you're just screaming and lathering up, we kind of look at it the same way and go, anybody going to answer this? It's best if you write to all of us. It's not that hard. But if you come across as a loon, there's really good odds we'll ignore you. If you come across as a reasonable person, we'll read it, respond. I answer almost everybody except for the occasional one where I'm just going, you're complaining to me about super caps in Null. Why are you complaining to the high sec monkey? You know, I have no opinion. Other than that...
Do you really turn away the guys that lather up? Because I would think they would add something.
Maybe for you, big boy, but for me, not so much. Anyways, there are a lot of things coming down the pipe, especially it's the speed that is throwing everybody for a loop. You know, this six-week turnaround, the summer changes that are going to be huge, and whether they come in the patch, what are we, less than just a shade over a week now?
I believe so. They might have to push it back a little bit based on the results of the soft test. I don't know. I feel like there's a few things that need a little bit of a tweak.
I actually enjoy that given the 6 week is fast and there are things that we don't get to see that come out, and we get yelled at, why didn't you fix this? And we're kind of going, well, because they can't show us everything. Again, it's either they can be devs or they can be communicative. But it's kind of pick one or run the scale of 50-50, 90-10, how fast do you want the changes? But at the same time, if they screw something up, they can fix it within 6 weeks. You know, it's not like, well, we'll probably get to that 6 months from now. So I both loathe the six-week turnaround for the speed that it makes us work at, makes them work at, but enjoy it for the speed that you can repair junk. Or, as you said, Alex, push stuff back. You know, it's not quite ready. No, we looked at it last second. It's not, if you don't ship it now, it won't be out for 6 months. If you don't ship it now, that's okay. A month and a half and it's out again.
Yeah, agreed. All right, let's wrap this up here.
Sounds good.
That is it, guys. DeclarationsOfWar.com. Participate in the show poll. You know what? We're not going to have a show poll. You know what we're going to have? Go on to DeclarationsOfWar.com and post in the comments some ideas about what we could do for the 100th episode. We're probably not going to do what you said, but I really want to hear from you, and we're going to crowdsource this a little bit. And if there are some good ideas that we can actually pull off, you know, that's certainly going to be a win in my mind. So comment on the thread. You can reach Noir via our public channel, Cafe Noir Dot. We are recruiting, especially now that we're coming out of the duality situation. We're going to go back on contract. And, yeah, we're looking forward to the FozzySoft patch. You can bet we're going to be hitting somebody. So, hop in. Trust Alliance is looking for a third corp, preferably either European or Eastern Coast United States based. Australians always welcome as well. We've got quite a nice Australian time zone now. Could always be, you know, could always use some more bros, but really looking for Europeans and Eastern Coast United States FCs, you know, sizable fleets, preferably at least 50 or larger. If that's your corp and you want to be in on the most experienced small gang warfare soft fighting alliance, you can hop on in. It should be good. So yeah, get in touch with me in game and join our public channel, Cafe Nordot. And if anyone wants to put in a donation to get Mike Azariah a decent phone, how can we do that, Mike?
I appreciate the thought. Actually, if you want to donate, you can always donate to the Magic School Bus, which is helping out the new bros and getting them into PvP and PvE ships so they actually can go out and risk something and not worry about that don't undock with something you can't afford to replace. It was free. You don't have to replace it. So you just contact me in-game and ask, and I'll give you all the information you want. Donations for the phone. Yes, I hate this phone. No, I'm not going to replace it because I like one that is plugged into the wall. I'm old.
Too late, dude. I already started the GoFundMe.
The GoFundMe for Mike's new phone. Mike, how many people are using the Magic School Bus? What kind of reach could people expect with their donations?
I hit every career system, all 12 career systems. I do it live. Usually I hit about 5% of who's in local. So on a single racial run, I give probably about 8 to 15 ships out on a run, and that's in a day, and then the next day I do it. I very seldom have repeat. I offer people to join my mailing list, and I've got over 300, probably close to 400 on the mailing list, in which I send out occasional fits and announcements of PvP or big events that they can go and take part in. For example, Redemption Road's Rookie Roam. Also, if you're an organization looking to recruit a bunch of fresh off the boat, you know, 50,000 skill point rookies and you're going to train them, talk to me. And if it sounds like you're actually going to train them and you're not just looking for bodies to safari or whatever the, you know, current term is, I might send a note out saying, look, these guys are doing something, or these guys are recruiting. They're a PvP, they're a NPSI roam, or they're miners, whatever. If you want to talk to the newbies, I'm in the Rookie Help channel, and I have a mailing list, and I'm talking to them on a regular basis. Think of me as a conduit, but you screw them over, and I will find someone to hunt you down. I think I know at least one mercenary organization I could probably hire at a discount.
And that's it, guys. Good hunting, listeners. Happy 4th of July.